Mountain Hill Radio contains graphic language and scenes some listeners may find troubling. Listener discretion is advised. Everything you are about to hear is absolutely fictional. The town of Mountain Hill is just that, a town. The people of Mountain Hill are just people, and never has there been a true case of a monster stealing a human's skin. The forests do not contain fairy creatures from another world, the streets are not terrorized by monsters who only come out at night, and the water is perfectly safe to swim in. You're safe here, we promise. This is Mountain Hill Radio. Hello and happy day, dear citizens of Mountain Hill. Well, friends, the storm is here, and it's only a matter of time until it breaks. Make sure to stay sheltered in place and do not leave your house under any circumstances except for in an absolute emergency. Sheriff Thornton will be sending around her deputies for one last sweep to ensure everyone has the supplies they need. Stay warm and safe, and just hold on until the danger is over. Lyra stares, unblinking, into the toolbox Renford keeps in his garage. She zoned out a few minutes ago, not really feeling up to working on her car today, and has instead been spending the last several minutes listening intently to the radio. The voice coming through the small speakers on the old boombox is both familiar and unfamiliar. A woman, who could be young or old, and she is telling a story Lyra knows far too well. She knows because she lived it. It has been 3 months now since she first moved to Mountain Hill. 3 months since she fought her first creature, which is, coincidentally, the story the strange woman is telling right now as Lyra listens. She shakes her head as she listens to the woman detail the night she left the apartment above Lost Fiction, a stupid mistake that led Lyra to learn that things were not quite as they seemed in this small town. She fought a Griffba that night, a horrifying creature with the head of a bear, the mane and tail and claws of a lion, and the body of a bull. That very creature was the exact reason she was even working on her car now. She was basically back to square one, restoring the car yet again. Though last time she restored it, it wasn't due to four long gouges down the driver's side door, created by a creature that had been attempting to kill her. Lyra refocuses just as the woman leaves the show with her seeing the creature for the first time, and she wonders briefly how on earth this woman knows so much about what happened that night. The only people who know every detail were the ones that had been there. Renford, the man who owns Lost Fiction, his wife, Mrs. Bell, Sheriff Tilly Thornton, and herself. Not even Colin, her newfound best friend and roommate, knows everything. Was there someone else there that night? Or is there something far more sinister at work here? Whatever it is, Lyra can't quite bring herself to be too worried about it. After she faced the Griffba and learned the truth of Mountain Hill, Lyra began fighting the creatures with Renford and Mrs. Bell's guidance. She borrowed journals from Mrs. Bell's extensive collection, after learning she was something called a lore keeper, and spent days after her confrontation with the creature learning about everything that had been documented in the past 200 years since the town was founded. It was only a couple short weeks later, filled with Lyra's own misadventures in fighting off the horrifying creatures, that Colin appeared in town. Unlike Lyra, who had discovered the town after learning her ex-girlfriend, Jennifer had not only been stealing her money, but also was cheating on her, and moved here on a whim, Colin had only just been passing through. Colin is a landscape photographer, and prior to discovering Mountain Hill, he spent much of his time traveling around the eastern United States, taking photos and making a decent amount of money selling them online. He'd stopped in just to take some photos, and ended up coming face to face with a hollow wraith after accidentally staying out past the town's curfew. During his fight with the Hollow Wraith, it was discovered that Colin has magic. No one so far has been able to figure out just how or why Colin has this ability, but over the past several months, he and Lyra have spent plenty of time practicing on slower nights when the creatures aren't very active. They learned Colin's magic is heavily influenced by emotion, and whenever he is angry or frustrated or is having a bad day, his magic manifests in fire. Of course, living in a town surrounded on all sides by a massive forest isn't really the safest place to practice magic of the flamey variety. Colin has been attempting to master his fire magic while also trying his best to learn other types to, you know, avoid situations like that time he accidentally started a very small fire behind Lost Fiction. The fire was actually a pretty worrisome size, and only after Lyra and Colin flew into a massive panic was Colin able to somehow put it out using water magic. He has struggled to call on water ever since, but they're working on it. After a mishap that led to Lyra spraining her ankle, a creature known as a Shadow Claw managed to trip her with its tail and she stumbled and landed too hard on the other foot, Colin accidentally discovered that not only does he have a knack for destructive magic, but he also has the ability to heal. Lyra still doesn't understand how it worked. Without any guidance, Colin was just feeling things out, seeing what felt right, and when he explained to her afterward that he just felt a calling to fix her ankle, Lyra began to wonder just what other types of magic Colin could wield. She and Colin aren't the only protectors of Mountain Hill, though. Mrs. Bell has a small gift of prophecy, and she foretold four saviors moving into town, just in time to fight back against a big bad that would threaten not only Mountain Hill, but the rest of the world as well. She doesn't know what the big bad is, nor when it'll strike, just that it will be soon. Totally not stressful. Nope, not at all. Ever since Rufus Stevens moved back to town, things have been a bit easier to manage. Lyra and Rufus are the muscles of the group, while Colin is the brains. He also is the one to heal them whenever they get injured, which is a huge bonus considering this job comes with a lot more risk than reward. The only person they are waiting on now is Dorothy, but Lyra seriously doubts they'll be seeing her anytime soon, if ever again. When her cousin, Andy, was killed by something Lyra named the Dreadwood during what was supposed to be a fun getaway for the girls, Dorothy vanished like smoke in the aftermath. It didn't surprise anyone, not once they all spent time with Dorothy. She seemed flighty, was the best way to describe her. And though Lyra didn't know Andy, didn't know Dorothy before her cousin's death, she knew without a doubt that girl was the center of Dorothy's entire universe. If she never comes back to Mountain Hill, Lyra can't blame her. She decides to clean up her tools and pack up the various things she got out when she first arrived at the Bell's house. Lyra isn't going to be able to focus on work today, not after discovering the strange radio station, and certainly not after the prophetic dream she had last night. She's been having all sorts of weird dreams in the past several weeks. At first, the dreams were nothing more than flashes of images, fading like smoke the longer she was awake. But the more time that has passed, the more she has realized they aren't just dreams, but visions. Everything has been a blur for the most part. There have been far too many images of things she has never seen, and people she has never met in Mountain Hill for her to believe it's all a great coincidence. She hasn't told anyone about the dreams, save for Colin. They've been trying to figure out just what the dreams are for, what they mean, but so far all they've gathered is that they might be prophetic. Last night's dream, though, hasn't faded at all. If she closes her eyes, she can do a minute-by-minute playback of every single part of the dream, leading up to the bone-chilling ending that still has the power to raise goosebumps on her arms if she thinks about it too much. She's trying not to think about it. But if the dreams are any indication, there is a darkness descending upon Mountain Hill, and she doesn't know who will make it out alive. The past month has been strange, on top of fighting creatures and having wild dreams. For starters, there have been tourists in town, shopping at the stores, eating at the diner, and hiking the trails. Though some stay the night at the local inn, they are always indoors or out of town by the time the sun sets, out of harm's way and safe from the creatures haunting the forest around town. Lyra has spent a lot of time wondering if, somehow, the imps have something to do with the tourists packing up with more than enough time to spare before things get scary. She wouldn't doubt it if it is the truth, though that raises the question. Are the imps benevolent, or do they have some insidious purpose for the things they do? If they are benevolent, then Lyra can say with absolute 100% certainty that the imps are assholes. It was them, after all, that led the Hollow Wraith to Colin the first day he was in town. And it was also them that stole Lyra's beloved copy of The Shining by Stephen King that night she fought the Griffba. According to Mrs. Bell, the imps are guided by the whims of fate, whatever that's supposed to mean. So while the things they do may ultimately be helpful, they aren't doing them out of the kindness of their hearts. Which is exactly why both Colin and Lyra ended up in the situations they did. And it isn't just those situations that lead Lyra to believe that they are assholes. Over the past few weeks, she has been guided to the Dread, a particularly nasty area of the woods that is enclosed in rings of yellow wildflowers, and always has horrible creatures living within it, more times than she can count. It always happens on nights when she gets separated from Rufus and Colin, when she is tracking a creature and gives chase. She runs much faster than either of the guys, and it gives them no small amount of irritation when she does it. It's always the same area of the Dread, too. Different than the area she and Colin found Dorothy in. She hasn't crossed the line of flowers yet, but she knows one of these days she isn't going to have a choice, if her visions have anything to say about it. Just as she finishes packing up, a knock sounds from behind her, and she glances over her shoulder to find Colin standing outside the garage, hands in the pockets of his grandpa-style cardigan and looking miserable in the cold, windy air. The weather has been particularly awful the past couple weeks, with high winds and dark, ominous clouds that stretch across the horizon as far as the eye can see. A storm is coming, Lyra knows, and when it finally breaks, she has a feeling Mountain Hill will be in for a reckoning.
"Hey," Colin says, stepping into the garage. "You about ready?"
Lyra glances at her watch and frowns a little. She sat down at noon to start working on her car, but it's almost 6 now. Where did all the time even go? "Suppose so," she says, sliding the toolbox back into its corner and scooping up her own jacket. She slips it on, zipping it up to cover the button-up shirt she's wearing today. This one is dark purple, printed with little bats and softballs. She was so excited when she found the ugly thing that she bought it immediately, despite its ridiculous $50 price tag. They head outside, and Lyra pulls the garage door shut behind them. "Have you listened to the radio at all?" she asks as they make their way up Renford and Mrs. Bell's street. The wind seems to pick up speed as they progress, tossing her bangs to and fro across her eyes. Lyra tries not to scowl at them. She cut them on a whim, back when she first discovered that Jennifer was cheating on her, and she absolutely hates them now. She's been growing them out, but it's a slow, slow process.
"The radio?" Colin asks, giving her a dubious look. "What radio stations do we even get out here?"
"Only one," she responds. She quickly explains what she heard earlier, while Colin grows more and more confused by the moment. "I don't know who this woman is, but I've got some questions for her."
"Me too," he says. "You really didn't recognize her voice?"
"No," Lyra shrugs. "Oh well, what can we do? It's not like anyone who hears the show will even believe what she's saying."
"Right," Colin agrees.
They continue walking, heading towards the diner, their usual Tuesday evening routine. Colin, Lyra, and Rufus meet at the Marionette Diner every week to eat dinner together and discuss anything they've seen since the last time they met. Though they patrol together every night, they don't often get much time to talk about things beyond what they're currently fighting. And in the last few weeks, there has been an unprecedented number of creatures appearing in and around Mountain Hill. "It's the cycle," Lyra says as she shovels food into her mouth. Colin scowls at her grisly manners. She often talks with her mouth full, and he's trying to get used to it. "It's time for a huge wave to hit, according to the journals."
"She's right," Colin says.
The notebook he's been using to organize all of the data he's gathered from the various journals from the three families sits on the table next to his plate, where he is actively writing down notes from this meeting.
"There is a cycle every 24 years or so, always correlating to a certain elemental magic. This time, it appears to be..."
"Water," Lyra interrupts, and Colin shoots her an annoyed look. She smiles apologetically, and he decides to forgive her. "For now. How's that creature codex coming along, by the way?" Colin's personal project of the last few weeks has been to compile all the important data regarding the creatures into one single document. Lyra called it the creature codex as a joke one day, but Colin liked the sound of it and scribbled the name across the front cover of his notebook and marker. He plans on typing it all up and getting it printed when it's finished, but the hardcover notebook he's been using will do for now.
"Good,"
he tells her.
"I found a lot of information on creatures we haven't seen, and a lot of information on creatures we have. So far, there isn't too much about the Dread, but that's to be expected. I can't imagine too many folks went in there and came out alive."
"Based on what y'all have told me," Rufus says, "I'm not surprised. That place sounds awful."
Lyra shudders. "It is. I hope you never have to see it, Rufus." They go back to eating, while Colin continues scribbling notes down in his notebook. While he's been compiling data from the journals, he's also been writing about the adventures they've been having, and taking notes on the modern weaknesses of the creatures they face. He's also been sketching the creatures, drawing them from memory as he absolutely refuses to take his camera out when they patrol. Besides, it just feels more authentic to sketch the creatures out. He feels like an adventurer, keeping track of his many conquests in his adventurer's journal. Maybe he played too many RPGs in high school, but honestly, it makes it easier to cope with how absolutely terrifying it actually is to be involved in something like this. As long as he keeps pretending he's playing a wizard or a sorcerer, and that his reality doesn't actually involve him using magic and fighting creatures from another realm, he'll keep doing just fine.
"Have you heard back from your brother?" Rufus asks,
cutting into Colin's train of thought as he adds shading to a sketch of the Dreadwood he's been working on. Colin glances up, a little surprised Rufus would ask about it. He mentioned writing a letter to his brother a while ago, and he figured only Lyra would remember that he'd even done it. But he shouldn't be surprised. Rufus is just like that. He's an extremely caring, gentle giant. Colin has witnessed on more than one occasion the lovable oaf going out of his way to protect tiny woodland animals from being injured during fights with the creatures. He's a good guy, and Colin knows this. So of course he would ask about his brother.
"No," Colin answers, shrugging. "But I don't really expect to. I'd love to get back in touch with him, but he's got his own life going on, and I don't really know what I would do if he did reach out."
"It was still good of you to try," Lyra offers, and Colin smiles at her. "I'm sure Troy will reach out. It'll just take some time."
"Thanks," Colin says.
They return to eating their food, discussing between bites their strategy for dealing with the sudden influx of creatures. It's during this conversation that the front door opens and Sheriff Tilly Thornton walks in. She's dressed in her uniform, hat and all, and she's carrying a handful of flyers. Rufus watches as she approaches the counter, having a quick conversation with the employee there for a moment. The employee nods, and Tilly returns to the front of the diner and hangs something up on the window next to the door. She notices the three of them and heads in their direction, and both Rufus and Colin pretend not to notice the sly smiles she and Lyra exchange. "Enjoying your dinner?" Tilly asks, making a point to look at all of them, though she really only intends the question to be aimed at Lyra. Still, they all answer in the affirmative. "I'm glad I ran into y'all here, actually," she says, holding out a flyer. Lyra accepts the flyer and frowns slightly as she looks it over, letting Colin look at it a moment before she hands it across the table to Rufus. Rufus reads over the flyer, and his stomach drops immediately at the information he sees there.
"How long has he been missing?" he asks, reading it again.
"Sammy Roenfeldt, age 6, last seen at Greensland Park, has short blonde hair, blue eyes, 43 inches tall, and was last seen wearing a black and white striped t-shirt, black cargo shorts, and tennis shoes. Has a birthmark on the left side of his jaw, shaped a little like a four-pointed star." "Just since this afternoon," Tilly says. "He's always home from the park by 3:45. His mama says he's never late. She says she gave him a watch for his birthday and taught him how to read it, and he's always back home right on time." Rufus's heart feels heavy in his chest. He feels absolutely powerless, an old familiar feeling he has struggled with many times in the past.
"What are you thinking happened to him?"
Tilly grimaces, eyes suddenly full of a weight the three of them know all too well. "I'm worried he might have wandered a little too close to the woods, and a creature grabbed him." Lyra looks a little sick at the thought. "Tilly, that could mean..." Tilly nods gravely. "I know. Believe me," she sighs, looking down at the photograph in the center of the flyer. "I know." Hey everyone, this is Raven, host and story writer of Mountain Hill Radio. I wanted to say a quick thank you for your patience over the past couple of months while I took a break to work on the show. I'm really excited about everything I have planned, and I cannot wait for you all to hear it. A couple quick reminders since it's been a minute. You can find information about the show on Facebook by searching Mountain Hill Radio, on Instagram by searching at Mountain Hill Radio Podcast, and on TikTok at Mountain Hill Radio Pod. You can also now find the show on Twitter by searching for Mountain Hill Radio. Your support these past few months has seriously meant the world to me, and this show exists because you decided to give it a chance and keep listening after episode 1. I wanted to say a huge thank you to everyone who has left nice comments on social media. You always bring a smile to my face, and it makes me so happy to see how the show has affected people. I have a favor to ask you. If you enjoy the show, would you please, please post about it, or even send it to a friend or family member? The biggest way you can help get more people involved in the show is by posting about it or telling people about it. If you do post or tweet about the show, make sure to use the Mountain Hill Radio hashtag so I can see it. Also, if you're listening to the show on Apple Podcasts, the best way to get more people to see it is by leaving a review. These reviews help let Apple know people enjoy the podcast, and they'll begin showing it to other people who might also enjoy it. Every little thing you do helps, and I'm so incredibly grateful to you all for your constant support. You can also now rate your favorite podcasts on Spotify. It only takes a few seconds, and it seriously helps me out in a big way. Finally, all music featured in the show is produced by Zach Bradshaw. You can find him by searching for Nautilus of the Tide on Instagram and all streaming platforms. Please take a minute to go find his music and give it all a listen. He's so talented, and his involvement with Mountain Hill Radio has seriously made the show so much more fun to make. My favorite song of his is In the Ruins. It's so dang good and absolutely worth a listen. That wraps up all the announcements I had to make today. Don't forget to follow the page on social media so you don't miss out on any announcements. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. After dinner, the team breaks up for a little while to prepare for the sunset. The wind has picked up even more since they first entered the diner, and Lara can't shake the chill she feels as she and Colin make their way to Lost Fiction. She feels heavy after their conversation with Tilly, who asked them to keep an eye out for Sammy. She's terrified for the poor boy. He's only been missing for a few hours, but it's getting dark out, and the worst creatures patrol the darkest parts of the woods at night. And if he managed to stumble into an area of the dread, Lara worries about what they will find of him, if they even find anything.
"Are you all right?" Colin asks as they climb the outer stairs leading to their shared apartment above the bookstore.
She nods. "I just feel awful for that family. I can't even imagine what they're going through."
"Neither can I," Colin says. "But we'll do what we can. Maybe he just got hopelessly lost."
He's placating her, but really, it's all he can do. Though they've been in a handful of tough situations fighting the creatures, nothing like this has ever happened. "Do you think she'll ever come back?" Lyra asks suddenly as they push into the apartment.
"Dorothy?"
Colin asks, though he knows that's exactly who she's talking about.
"I don't know. Hope so. We could really use her help."
Lyra nods and heads back into her bedroom, getting ready for the night ahead. Colin frowns a little as he glances around the living room, cataloging the various piles stacked around the room. Lyra is the type of person who can find organization in a mess, while Colin prefers to have things as neat and tidy as possible. They've compromised a little over the past months since he's lived here. It's still messy to Colin's standards, but clean enough that he's not constantly anxious. Fortunately, Lyra is not the type of person to just leave dirty dishes around, so at least the messes aren't gross. They're just... there. He collapses onto the couch and flips open his journal, sketching a while longer until Lyra finishes getting ready. He adds details to the dreadwood, feeling particularly unsettled when there's a flash of lightning outside, followed quickly by loud, booming thunder. They've known a big storm is coming for a while. If the heavy gray clouds on the horizon are any indicator, it's going to be massive. Tilly and her handful of deputies have been going around town making sure everyone is prepared in the event folks won't be able to leave their homes, bringing food and supplies to the folks who already have a hard time leaving the house as it is. Colin wants to believe the storm is natural, and totally unrelated to the things going on in Mountain Hill, but he has his doubts. With all signs pointing to the elemental cycle shifting to water, it's unlikely the storm is totally unrelated. Which means when it breaks, he has a feeling it's not going to be just a fight to protect the town. It's going to be a fight for their lives. Rufus meets Colin and Lyra at the Greensland trailhead, the axe he collected a few weeks ago slung over his shoulder. It's surprising how natural it feels to carry a weapon like this. He's never considered himself a violent person. He's never been in a fight and usually gets out of arguments with soft words and kind actions. Fighting these creatures has awakened something in him, a fierce protective instinct over the entire town. It's his calling. He's 1,000% sure of that. "We'll head towards the river," Lyra says, as Rufus stops beside them. Colin is wearing his grandpa cardigan and khaki pants and a pair of hiking boots Lyra finally talked him into buying a week or two ago. Lyra is still wearing her button-up shirt, tucked into high-waisted skinny jeans, and topped off with a pair of high-top tennis shoes. And Rufus wears his usual red and black flannel, jeans, and boots. He smiles a little, internally, at how completely different the three of them are. He wonders at the fact that the universe, fate, whatever you want to call it, brought them all together. All from different walks of life, all from vastly different backgrounds. People who normally never would have had a reason to cross paths. Though he knows without this mission bringing them all together, they would never have met, he is immensely grateful to know them.
"What makes you think he'll have gone to the river?" Colin asks.
"I'm thinking that, worst case scenario, if he was grabbed by a creature, they would take him towards the river. We can start looking there and canvass the surrounding area." Tilly said they already looked at this area earlier. "They found one of Sammy's toys down this path," she says, and her voice cracks a little. She clears her throat. Tilly says she's going to have her people keep searching in the morning, but she's going to be a little stricter about curfew until we find him. She doesn't want any more unexplained disappearances.
"Makes sense," Rufus says. "Are we going to be splitting up?"
Lyra nods. "We'll meet back up in an hour, and if none of us found anything, we'll patrol together. We still have to do a regular patrol on top of this, check out all the neighborhoods, make sure none of the creatures make it into town. Rufus, you'll take your usual route down by the trails leading to the lake. Colin, you'll stick to the middle of town, and I'll patrol the southern end, around the edge of town. Sound good?" It's their usual plan, and though they always start the night patrolling this way, inevitably something happens to lead the three of them together. Their meeting ends just as the sun begins to set. A hush falls over the woods for a moment as the sun descends, and the pink sky slowly fades to black. It'd be peaceful, almost, if it wasn't a harbinger of the creature's awakening. They all agree on Lyra's plan and head into the woods, following the trail for about half a mile before they split off into their separate groups. Lyra follows the river south, Rufus follows the river north, and Colin begins making his way through the trees, walking along paths that have long since overgrown with disuse, watching for anything and everything that could signify that a small child was brought here. After an hour, he comes up empty and heads back to the Greensland Trail, where the three of them agreed to meet. Lyra is standing there, bat in hand, looking every bit the leader she is. Colin glances around, raising his brows.
"Where's Rufus?"
"Not sure," Lyra says, swinging her bat back and forth in what Colin has realized is a nervous habit. "Maybe he found something?"
"Maybe," Colin agrees.
He turns to the direction Rufus went, frowning as he strains his ears, listening for any sort of movement. Anything that might signify where Rufus currently is or what is holding him up. The cracking of a branch underfoot is the only warning Lyra and Colin get before the first creature appears. Colin moves closer to Lyra, hands held just in front of his face as he feels his magic surge through him. It's still such a strange sensation, reminding him of a very, very fast and intense pins and needles feeling zipping through his entire body. It was painful the first few times it happened, but Colin has quickly grown used to the feeling. He doesn't enjoy it, necessarily, but at least it doesn't hurt anymore. Lyra raises her bat, immediately on high alert as the creature ambles towards them. At first, she thinks it might be a graveling, which wouldn't be all that surprising, considering they're the most common creatures the trio have seen the past few weeks. But as the creature staggers forward, she realizes this is something she hasn't seen before. Something horrifying in its own right. Its skin is a light shade of gray. Its eyes are yellow and sunken in, its cheeks gaunt. Its hair is long and clinging to its skin in thick clumps. There is something dripping from it, something thick and dark. As it moves closer, the smell of rot and decay hits them both, and Lyra tries not to gag. "Oh, jeez," she says, holding her bat higher and taking a step back. "What the fuck is that thing?"
"I don't know,"
Colin says, and Lyra's hopes crash and burn. That means whatever this is, it isn't written about in any of the journals.
"It looks like a graveling, but worse."
"So much worse," Lyra agrees. "Why is it wet?"
"It came from the lake, I think," Colin says. That's where Rufus went, right?
Oh, shit. There are more of them, coming from the direction of the lake. One stumbles forward from the trees, its head bent at an unnatural angle. Another creeps out, its fingers twisted and gnarled in impossible ways. They all have the same gray skin, the same glowing yellow eyes. And they're moaning. "All go right, you go left," Lyra suggests. "Get past them and head towards the lake. We need to make sure Rufus is okay."
"Yeah, okay," Colin agrees.
He starts moving, heading left, while Lyra ducks to the right. She smacks her bat against her palm and shouts, "Over here, you terrifying bastards!" Colin rolls his eyes as she yet again uses herself as a distraction so he can get away. And also at the name calling. "Find Rufus," she shouts. "And meet me in the middle of town." He sighs, torn between staying behind to help her and going after his teammate. Colin is terrified to leave her alone. Last time he did, she was seriously hurt and nearly died after an encounter with the Dreadwood. But she is moving much faster than the ambling wet things, so he decides it's worth it to turn and go after Rufus. Lyra watches Colin go and turns her attention on the things now heading in her direction. All of them are focused on her, which is good, as she doesn't exactly know how she or Colin is supposed to fight them. She begins walking backwards, heading away from the river, and they follow, tripping and stumbling over stones and gnarled roots. None of them fall, though they all seem close to it. One of them lets out another moan, and the sound of it skates across her skin, leaving behind the sensation as if someone just drug their nails down a chalkboard. She shudders, and somewhere in the distance, thunder roars. Lyra takes a deep breath and decides, "To hell with this." She stops in her tracks and lifts her bat, waiting for the one closest to her to get within striking distance before she slams her bat down hard on its head. The thing grunts before collapsing to the ground, no longer moving. "Alright, that was easy enough," Lyra says. Her confidence bolsters and she calls out, "Come on, this way." The creatures don't move any faster, but she stands her ground, waiting for them to get closer before she strikes. She takes two of them down, cracking their skulls with a sickening sound, and watching them fall to the ground. It isn't until the fourth one gets closer that the first creature she hit begins to stir, rising from the ground in slow, jerky movements. Lyra stumbles back, out of reach of the thing as it tries to grab her. "Oh geez," she says as she watches it stand. Its head, where she hit it, is completely bashed in, with the perfectly shaped indentation of her bat. But its strange yellow eyes fixate on her, and as it begins moving, she realizes that there is a sense of awareness in this thing that she's never seen before on any other creature. Everything she has faced up to this point has seemed almost mindless, just doing what it's doing because that's all it knows. But this creature standing before her, with its two long limbs and soaking wet hair and ragged clothing, seems to have a sense of purpose. This thing wasn't just mindlessly wandering the woods, having come freshly from wherever it was these things came from. It was sent here. And Lyra has a feeling she and her friends are its targets. She swears under her breath, taking another swing at the thing despite knowing it's probably useless. The other two creatures she managed to hit are now rising from where they crumpled on the ground, moaning that awful moan as they climb to their feet. Lyra has faced more than a handful of creatures that wouldn't go down easily. Since her fight with Agrippa, she's faced several things that took her several hits before they died. But something about these new creatures is different, and she has a feeling her bat just isn't going to cut it against these things. "And of course," she mutters as she watches the creature fall to the ground, "you sent away the person who wields magic." Lyra has no idea if Colin's magic would do anything against these things, because no two creatures are made exactly the same. Though all have a weakness against iron and cannot pass barriers made by salt, all of them have other strengths and weaknesses either found by the trio fighting and experimenting with different ways to take them down, or from entries in the journal. It's clear that blunt objects will not do anything beyond bludgeoning these things, so Lyra sighs, swinging her bat over her shoulder, and begins running in the direction Colin went. Colin doesn't know where he's going. He followed the river, but one of those things climbed up from its banks, and when he threw a ball of fire at it and it did nothing, then a ball of water and that did nothing, he just started running. He was certain he could find his way back to the river, but now he's desperately lost. And he's reached the edge of the Dread. They've mapped out some of the surrounding woods in the area, and located a few random places where the Dread has taken root, but they have no idea how big these areas are without crossing through them. And for very obvious reasons,
I don't really want to do that. Even in the daytime, when everyone should be safe from the creatures, entering the Dread is a risky maneuver. Time doesn't work the same there. The first and only time he entered the area, despite it being moderately warm in Mountain Hill at the time, it was like he'd walked into a winter wonderland, minus all the snow. But Lyra, in her explorations before Colin came to town, says she found an area that she went into during the daytime, and it was as dark as midnight past the yellow wildflowers. The Dread is dangerous, and after their last expedition into it nearly ended with Lyra's death, he isn't too keen on entering it again. But does he go left or right? He's gotten so turned around running from the creature that he has no idea which area of the Dread this even is. There is one closer to the lake, but also one a few miles away that is closer to town. He decides, fuck it, he has to get to the center of town eventually anyways. He takes a right, following along the edge of the Dread until it veers sharply left, and now he's just running straight ahead, through the woods. He keeps running, until he hears something that sounds a little too human for his liking. He slams to a halt, trying his best to catch his breath as quietly as he can while he listens for the sound again. There. To his right, someone is groaning as if they are in pain. He recognizes the sound to be Rufus, and he takes off at a sprint towards it. Oh shit, he swears when he finally sets his eyes on Rufus. He's lying on his stomach, and there are two swipes across his back that look as if they were made by something with four claws. The injuries aren't bleeding too heavily, and Colin wonders if whatever scratched Rufus has some sort of paralyzing poison on its claws. He knows the Shadow Claw has nightshade on its claws, and he briefly wonders if that is what did this. He is just absolutely thrilled by the idea of facing one of those while also running from whatever the hell that other thing is. But he also knows the Shadow Claw likes to render its victim paralyzed before dragging them back to their caves and eating them there. He crouches down, calling on his healing magic and holding his hands over Rufus's back, trying to heal the damage as best he can. His magic begins working, but with great resistance, and Colin begins feeling something he's never felt before. It starts as a tingling at the base of his skull, then moves over his entire head until it almost feels like his brain is buzzing. As quickly as it happens, the sensation fades, until only one thing is bouncing around his brain. Curare. The word repeats itself in his head, starting as a small whisper before growing into a shout. He flinches, but the word doesn't stop echoing. It's not in any voice he recognizes, but all the same, he understands it completely. The poison in Rufus is curare. He doesn't understand necessarily how he has that knowledge, but it's there. His magic shifts itself accordingly, and he knows somehow he is drawing the poison out of Rufus's system. He watches in amazement as a thick ooze slips out of the wounds, sliding down Rufus's back and seeping into the material of his shirt and the surrounding plant life. When the poison is drawn out, Colin's magic shifts back to normal, and the strange buzzing sensation happens in reverse across his skull, before fading away completely. Rufus takes a deep, gulping breath of air, and his wounds begin to bleed in earnest. "Stay still for me, Rufus," Colin says in as commanding a voice as he can muster, while still trying to remain gentle. "I'm healing you, but if you keep moving, you're going to make your injuries worse." Rufus thankfully stops moving, and Colin's magic stitches his wounds together until all that is left behind are some faint pink scars. Lyra's injuries left scars behind as well, and Colin wonders if they will fade with time, or if they will always be there, if the magic of this place will not allow them to completely heal.
"You can move now," Colin says,
and Rufus tenderly pushes himself up, resting on his knees as he catches his breath.
"Are you all right?"
Rufus's eyes are glassy, unfocused for a moment, before they land on Colin.
"I couldn't breathe," he says,
and Colin's heart squeezes at the panic in his voice.
"That thing, whatever the hell it was, scratched me. And when I fell, I couldn't for the life of me catch my breath. Then I just couldn't breathe at all."
Colin reaches out and wraps his hand around the back of Rufus's neck, squeezing gently.
"You're all right, Rufus. I got to you in time."
Rufus nods his thanks, though Colin can tell he's still pretty shaken up.
"What are those things?"
"No idea," Colin says.
"But we need to go. Can you walk?"
"Yeah," Rufus says, and he rises to his feet. "Thank you, Colin."
"Always," Colin replies. "Do you know where we are?"
Rufus glances around.
"We're about a mile away from the lake.
I got there and someone was standing at the waterline. A woman, I think. I tried calling to her, and when she looked at me, she wasn't human, exactly, but she looked human. I told her she needed to get back to town, and she laughed. And then this thing crawled up onto the shore, and it started running at me. I took a swing at it, chopped its head clean off, but Colin, man, it kept coming. He pauses, shaking his head. I've never seen anything like it.
Let's get back to town and find Lyra, Colin tells him.
He feels panic sinking low in his gut. His magic did absolutely nothing to the creature he faced. And if Rufus chopped off the thing's head and it kept going, he worries for Lyra. She only has a bat, and though she's strong, he's terrified it won't be enough.
Town's that way, Rufus says, pointing in the opposite direction Colin was running towards earlier.
Let's go, Colin says, and they begin walking.
Shit. Lyra stumbles, tripping over a root. She catches herself before she hits the ground and keeps running. As soon as she took off at a run towards town, the thing started chasing her, running nearly as fast as she was going. She'd assumed, foolishly, that because they were moving so slow at first, they would continue to move that slow as they followed her. But of course, she was wrong, and now they were hot on her heels, making those awful moaning sounds as they tried to catch her. She's grateful for all the years of running, even more grateful that the magic surrounding the town somehow offers her even more endurance than she already has. She's positive that even with all her training, she would have already collapsed into a heap on the ground if it weren't for that strange magic. Something flashes to her left, and out of the corner of her eye, Lyra sees a bright pulsing light. She recognizes it immediately as a strange form that appeared to her months ago, the thing that whispered in her head and told her to look for the other three protectors of Mountain Hill. She hasn't thought about the creature much since it appeared to her, hasn't even told anyone else about it, but now as it appears to her again, she knows it's trying to help her. She veers off course, heading in the direction of the glowing being. As her eyes collide with it, it vanishes, but she sees what it was standing beside. There is a line of trees, standing too close together to appear natural. They create a fence of sorts, protecting whatever is behind them, but as she approaches, she notices a gap just wide enough for her to slip through sideways. She pushes harder, sprinting just a little faster before turning sideways just in time to leap through the small opening. She doesn't know why, but she stops and turns to look at the gap in the trees she just came through. She watches in complete fascination as the trees move, their trunks bending until the gap is completely gone. She can still hear the creatures groaning on the other side, but she knows she is safe for now. Thank you, she calls out to the air around her. She doesn't know if the glowing creature is still anywhere close by, but she has a feeling it hurt her nevertheless, when a slight breeze stirs the hairs along the back of her neck. Now, where am I? She asks, turning to face the clearing behind her. There is something strange about this area, something that feels almost like entering the dread, but different. Whenever she has gone into the dread, she feels queasy, uncomfortable in her own skin. Here she feels a sense of calm, a sense of safety, almost. She doesn't know where here even is, but she gets a sense that this place is other, somehow. The way the trees line the clearing tells her that the magic is definitely at work here. But other than the strange sensation and the remoteness of this area, there's absolutely nothing strange or special about it. It's just empty. Devoid of any trees or plant life beyond grass. There are boulders scattered about, but other than that, there's absolutely nothing to be seen here. Weird, she mutters, shaking her head. Now what? There is a glimmer off in the distance, and Lyra knows that this is not the work of the glowing being, but of the imps. She sighs, but begins heading in that direction anyways, knowing they are, hopefully, showing her a way out. When she reaches the end of the clearing, she finds another gap in the wall of trees. She pokes her head out, finding the area outside the trees devoid of any creatures. With a sigh of relief, she offers a quick thank you to the imps, though she is still leaning towards them being total assholes, and climbs through the gap. She turns just in time to watch the trees move again, closing the gap and returning to their protective stance. Lyra doesn't know if she'll find this area again, but she makes a note to attempt to come here during the day. She'll have to come alone, because she wants to investigate it before she brings anyone else out here. There was a reason the glowing being showed her this place. A reason beyond just providing her an escape from the things that were chasing her. For now, though, she adds it to the very long list of things she needs to figure out and takes off at a light jog, heading in the direction of town.
Rufus and Colin are catching their breaths, standing in front of Lost Fiction. They made it here just a moment ago, but they don't have long to rest. One of those things is after them, and though it was running as it chased them through the woods and into town, it slowed its pace right alongside them when they finally reached the store. Now it is just slowly walking towards them, one of its feet dragging on the ground in a grotesque way.
"It reminds me of the Gravelings, but smarter," Rufus says. "You really don't know what that thing is?"
Colin shakes his head, holding his side as the stitch there slowly unravels itself.
"No clue, but I agree, it definitely looks like a Graveling."
"Why is it wet, though?" Rufus asks, sounding as despairing as Lyra had when she asked the question earlier. Colin can't help his laugh, despite the awful situation they found themselves in. Rufus raises his brows, and Colin shakes his head.
"Lyra asked me the same question."
"Oh," Rufus says. He still seems a little confused, but lets it go.
"What do we do now?"
"I have no idea," Colin says.
"My magic did nothing to it. Your axe didn't even slow it down."
He looks in the direction of the tree line, hoping Lyra appears there soon.
"I don't know if Lyra's bat will do much to them if chopping their heads off didn't do the trick."
"It won't," Lyra chimes in suddenly from behind him. Colin spins and looks at her, confused as hell as to how she ended up on this side of town. But she's here, and that's all that matters.
"Fuck," Rufus curses, as the creature continues heading towards them.
It's across the street now, its strange yellow eyes glancing between the three of them. Lyra wants to laugh at the fact that Rufus just swore, but she can't bring herself to.
"I don't know what to do," she tells them, feeling a sense of hopelessness as she watches the creature.
"I all but smashed one of their heads to pieces. There's no way it should have survived that."
"Then we just keep fighting until it stops," Colin says. "That's all we can do. At least it's only one of them."
"Why'd you have to say that?" Rufus asks, pointing towards the tree line. Colin and Lyra both look where he's pointing, and sure enough, three more of the creatures stumble out of the woods, all moving as slowly as the first one. Lyra opens her mouth to say what she isn't exactly sure, when she hears a loud, rumbling engine. Her head snaps towards the end of Ashton Avenue that leads out of town, hope fluttering in her chest as she waits, holding her breath, for whoever it is about to round the corner. It doesn't take long, as the sound of the engine grows louder, for a single headlight to appear in the distance. Lyra knows without seeing who exactly it is that just appeared, like a knight in shining armor.
"Who is that?" Rufus asks as he watches the motorcycle approach.
"It's Dorothy," Colin says, and Rufus feels some small semblance of relief that it won't just be the three of them facing off against these things. Though, he doesn't exactly know what Dorothy's arrival will do when none of the three of them even manage to hurt the creatures, let alone kill them. But then he watches, in utter fascination, as the creatures all collectively slap their hands over their ears, their moaning growing to a deafening degree. Then, all at once, they turn, sprinting back towards the tree line and disappearing into the darkness.
"What the?"
he asks, but before he can finish his sentence, the motorcycle rolls to a stop directly in front of them, and the engine cuts out. He holds his breath, waiting for the creatures to reappear, but it seems they've managed to scare them off. For now, at least. The woman on the motorcycle is wearing a full-face helmet, a black leather jacket, black skinny jeans with holes in the knees, and a pair of black leather cowboy boots. She puts the kickstand down, resting the bike before she reaches up and pulls off her helmet. Her hair is black, braided into two pigtails on either side of her head. Her eyes are a bright, vibrant blue, and as they fix on the trio, she seems almost surprised to see him standing with Colin and Lyra.
"Well, hey there," she says in a slightly accented voice.
She smiles, and her smile can only be described as ruthless as she asks, "Have I missed all the fun?"